Welcome to the Middle East Report. Each week, we bring you truthful reporting on Israel and the Middle East. We try to connect you to the people, places, and geography of what we read in the Bible and to help you see things through a biblical lens. That is very, very important if you want to understand what's happening in that part of the world. And today, we are going to go to the capital city of Israel, to Jerusalem, and talk to a dear friend of mine, Chris Mitchell. He is the Middle East Bureau Chief of the Christian Broadcasting Network, CBN, and in a time where the world's attention is riveted on events in the Middle East, CBN viewers have come to appreciate this guy, Chris Mitchell, and his entire staff. They provide timely reports from that explosive part of the world, and of course, Chris, he just does such an amazing job to bring us biblical and a prophetic perspective to the daily news events that are shaping our world. And Chris, it is so good to be with you right there in Jerusalem, in the capital of Israel.
Hey, John, great to be with you. Yeah, you need to come back soon.
Chris, I miss it. And I, of course, returned in March and didn't have an opportunity to connect with you. But the next time that we are there in the land of Israel, we will absolutely do that. And right here at the top of the Middle East Report, Chris, I just want everybody to know that if they want accurate information and news on what's happening in Israel from a biblical perspective, a truthful perspective, they need to connect with CBN Israel. You have an incredible staff that just does an amazing job. And Chris, I'm a big fan. I tell everybody about what you guys do there in the land of Israel. You have so many things that you're involved in. Thank you for the great job that you guys are doing there in the land of Israel.
We do have an amazing staff, and I might be the one often on camera, but there's so many people behind the scenes, producers, cameramen, editors that do an amazing job. And I think we all feel we're on the same page in terms of being able to, striving to tell truthful, accurate stories about what's happening here in Israel, especially now, and especially since October 7th, because there's been so much misinformation, sometimes outright lies, but obviously also obfuscation, this kind of muddying of the waters, what's really happening. And it's a challenge, but we just feel with the help of Holy Spirit, we keep striving to present what we feel is important stories for people in the world to know, and especially in the body of Christ.
You do an awesome job, and there is so much going on there in the land of Israel. And I wanted to start off the top of the Middle East Report to have you just talk about something very miraculous and something amazing that happened, and that is the recent hostage rescue there in the land of Israel. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what happened with the rescue of these hostages just several days ago?
If there was one thing that about that rescue, that it provided some good news for Israelis that have been living in bad news for almost 8 months since October 7th, and that was the rescue of Noah Argamani and three other men. They were kept in different places. Three men were in one location about 200 meters, you know, about 600 feet. Noah was in another location. Apparently, because of both Israeli and U.S. surveillance, they knew the location of where these four hostages were, and they had elaborate planning for weeks, if not months, to go ahead and perform this rescue. It was meticulously timed, for example, because they had to start the operations at each location at the very second, and it was successful in terms of getting the hostages out. Their families obviously were elated, and you know, there has been comments and stories about what happened afterwards or during the rescue. Apparently, there were hundreds of Palestinians who came, and tragically, some died in the crossfire. But also, Hamas, which they do often, was firing out of civilian homes and out of civilian crowds. And that's why and how many Palestinians have been and can be caught in the crossfire. There were people with RPGs and weapons coming against the soldiers. And this team, this counterterrorism team, was probably one of the best in the world at rescue operations. They actually came in disguise. They came in with a truck with furniture, mattresses, and they disguised themselves as refugees from Rafah. And they were able to go in and get these hostages. So for Israelis that have almost been losing hope that these hostages would ever be released, it was really a jubilant time with in the streets, on the beaches, and certainly when in the hospitals when these hostages were reunited with their families. It was just, at least for a couple of days, it was really a jubilation here in Israel.
You know, as you're listening to the Middle East Report and you're thinking Gaza and, you know, what's happening there in that area, I don't think, Chris, a lot of people realize how much of an urban warfare it is there, that there are thousands and thousands of people, you know, all around where, you know, Israel's trying to, you know, eliminate these Hamas terrorists. So it's a very, very difficult operation, and this is a huge success for Israel. Unfortunately, there's some on the political side that put more attention on, you know, the loss of some of the civilians as a result of getting those hostages out there than, you know, rejoicing with Israel on getting those hostages.
Yeah, some people are describing it as the same kind of successful raid as Entebbe, which was in 1976. For those that may not be familiar with that, that was when a plane was hijacked with more than 100 Israelis on it, and the IDF had this elaborate plan to go into Entebbe to actually disguise themselves as Idi Amin, who was the ruler at that time. They came in, they disguised themselves, and they were able to rescue those hostages. The only IDF soldier that died was Jonathan Netanyahu, which is Benjamin Netanyahu's brother. But that's the kind of comparison of what this raid meant to Israelis. And as you said, it's some of the hardest warfare, is urban warfare, complicated by the fact that Gaza is just woven with maybe more than 400 miles of tunnels. And we had the opportunity to go in there about 2 months ago to one of the tunnels in the city of Khan Yunis. And what was described to us in the briefing that we received is that tunnel shafts were ubiquitous. They were almost everywhere, and homes and mosques and schools and even a supermarket. So this network of tunnels is like a spider's web. And when you go down into these tunnels, you can see branches going off from different directions. So all of that makes the kind of warfare that Israel is fighting in Gaza probably the most complicated in the world, because when you add urban warfare and then you add the dimension of tunnels underneath this urban landscape, it's extremely, extremely difficult.
Well, let's turn to the next item that is definitely in the news right now, and that is what appears to be, you know, some confusion about a recent ceasefire proposal that was mentioned by President Biden in his speech. He said it was put forth by Israel, this proposal, the ceasefire proposal, to end things there in Gaza. But it is getting a lot of pushback from the Israeli government. In fact, the State Department said that an agreement is important, but we can work out the details later. Can you tell us, you know, about this confusion and how Israel is seeing this proposal and maybe what you know about that?
Well, it is very confusing, John, and you wonder whose proposal this really is. President Biden did that a couple of weeks ago, and now Anthony Blinken was just here in Israel pushing that same proposal. It's a three-phased plan to stop the fighting, release some of the hostages, and just as a side note, it's unclear how many hostages are actually still alive. With the rescue of the four hostages, there's maybe 116 remaining. 40 of those are officially confirmed that have died. And then even Hamas is probably not in control of all of those hostages. So to go back to the plan, the first phase is that there would be a stop in the fighting, a ceasefire. Some of the hostages would be released. And then the second plan would go on eventually to the quote-unquote end of hostilities. But Israel is playing a very delicate game right now, and I'll just read you what came out just today by a quote-unquote Israeli government official, which says, Israel will not end the war before achieving all its war objectives, destroying Hamas' military and governing capabilities, freeing all the hostages, and ensuring Gaza doesn't pose a threat to Israel in the future. The proposal presented enables Israel to achieve these goals, and Israel will indeed do so. The language is crafted very delicately, John, I think the bottom line is two things. First of all, non-starters for Israel are, one, a permanent end to the war before Hamas is destroyed, and two, that Hamas cannot be a governing entity after the war is over. On the other hand, Hamas has their own goals. They want the end of the war, and they want to survive is the bottom line for them. So I think Hamas told Reuters earlier today that they want to they accept the proposal, but it's just almost a semantic game right now between Hamas, the Biden administration, and Israel, and as well as the mediators that would include Egypt and Qatar. So we'll see how it goes. You know, and the UN did accept the proposal in the UN Security Council, which apparently may put more pressure on Israel. They say it's putting more pressure on Hamas, but we'll see. I think Yahya Sinwar, who's the head of Hamas, is playing a very strategic game by prolonging the conflict and trying to put more pressure, international pressure, on Israel to stop the war. But so far, Benjamin Netanyahu and his government are resisting that pressure to stop the war, because Israel and Israelis, they don't want a repeat of October 7th.
Now, you mentioned the UN Security Council passing a ceasefire resolution. You wrote on this at CBN. This was sponsored by the U.S., this U.S. ceasefire resolution, apparently allowing the Palestinian Authority to control Gaza. I guess that's what's part of this ceasefire proposal, after they do so-called reforms. And so, you know, they're trying to get the ceasefire passed, and then they're looking at who's going to take over Gaza, and they're saying, well, the Palestinian Authority can do that after they have reforms. First of all, let's look at the UN ceasefire proposal. There is so much pressure from the United States on Israel. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Very much so. I think that's been the theme for several months now. At the very beginning of the war, I think Israelis felt like the United States had their back. They were going to provide weapons and ammunition to fight this battle after what happened on October 7th. Then, as a reminder, what happened on October 7th was a massacre of 1,200 Israelis in the kibbutzim along the Gaza border. These are people that really had reached out to many of the Palestinians, had taken them to the hospitals, had employed them, and yet what actually some of the same people that were employed came, they did some of the atrocities, they robbed some of the homes. So as a reminder, that's what Israelis remember, and they don't want a repeat of that. So at the very beginning of the war, the U.S. and President Biden seemed to be having their back, but increasingly they seem to resist the advances of the IDF militarily and trying to undermine the Netanyahu government, because Netanyahu has been pushing back against the U.S., against their attempts to restrain and micromanage the war. So, and they've done it by Chuck Schumer, the majority leader in the Senate, calling for new elections for a democratically elected government, basically saying Israel should change their leadership. And you go on to Benny Gantz, who is now out of the war cabinet, but was in, and a lot of people saw him as perhaps being manipulated or used by the Biden administration to, again, undermine the Netanyahu government. The reason being is that what the Biden administration wants and what the Netanyahu coalition government wants are two different things. A lot of people over here feel it's domestic politics for the Biden administration. They want to be seen. They don't want to be seen as too pro-Israel in some of the key states like Michigan. And so, you know, somebody had joked that the two-state solution, or the two states that the Biden administration are more interested in, is Michigan and Nevada for their electoral votes. So it's very difficult right now for Israel with all the pressure, not only from the United States, but international pressure from, say, the ICC, the International Criminal Court, or the International Court of Justice. And just to follow up, John, this whole idea in the resolution, and this is what kind of stuck out to me, is they want the Palestinian Authority to govern both the West Bank, which is Judea and Samaria, and the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Authority, according to Itamar Marcus, who has been monitoring the Palestinian Authority media for well over 20 years, is really very much like Hamas. They, in their official media, they want a one-state solution, not a two-state solution. They want to replace Israel. They see this as a religious war to defeat the Jewish people and eliminate the state of Israel. So this is the entity that the UN resolution is looking for. And yet, if you look at their official media, and one statistic that Itamar Marcus cited was 90% of Palestinians, both in Gaza and the West Bank, approved and rejoiced in what happened on October 7th.
Well, that is shocking. And, you know, the Palestinian Authority, if they really want reforms, they need to change their charter. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, their charter still calls for the destruction of Israel and to have, you know, an entire so-called Palestinian state there in Israel, you know, without any Jews. I mean, that's what I understand. And so I don't know how you can have an entity like that, which, as you said, is no different than Hamas, you know, take over the governing there in Gaza.
No, that's exactly right. I believe the PLO has not rescinded that part of the charter. And certainly Hamas, as part of their charter, calls for the destruction, the obliteration of the Jewish people. And, you know, it's very helpful to see this in a religious or a spiritual context, because Hamas and many of the PA, the Palestinian Authority, see this in a religious light. You know, once land that has been under the authority of Islam and then is no longer under the authority of Islam, like Israel, which this was controlled by the Ottoman Empire for 400 years before 1917. And so, you know, many Muslims consider this Islamic land that must, because of their religious duty, come and reclaim that land. So this is part of Hamas's motivation as well as the Palestinian Authority.
Well, there's so much going on there in Israel right now. And of course, we ask you to pray for everything that's happening there. And I want to encourage you to connect with Chris Mitchell and his team there in Jerusalem, in Israel. They are doing an awesome job of keeping everybody informed on what's happening there on the ground, there in the Middle East, in Israel. JerusalemDateline.org is a great place for you to go. JerusalemDateline.org, where Chris and his team put together a wonderful video report a couple of times a week that you will want to watch. And you're not going to want to miss any of those episodes, because they have an entire team just dedicated to keeping you and your family informed. So please check that out when you go to JerusalemDateline.org, JerusalemDateline.org. And Chris Mitchell is the Middle East Bureau Chief for the Christian Broadcasting Network for CBN. Well, we don't want to forget that there is another war that's going on right now, Chris, in the north with Hezbollah. And this war up there is heating up. There's a lot of people that say this thing could really spin out of control in a big way very, very soon. And, you know, a few moments ago, we just talked about the pressure that the Biden administration is placing upon Israel. Well, I saw a report just recently where the United States basically was warning Israel about igniting a broader war with Hezbollah, because that's going to invite, you know, Iran in, and just warning Israel, once again, putting pressure on them. Can you talk about the war there, or maybe pressure from the United States, and what's going on that front?
Yeah, the war is something that's been going on since October 8th, the very day after October 7th, and Hezbollah began shooting rockets and missiles, mortars, and anti-tank missiles from South Lebanon into northern Israel. And because of that, perhaps up to 100,000 Israelis are no longer living in their communities on the northern border. I believe there's 43 communities that right now are basically ghost towns. And some of those 100,000 Israelis are in hotels here in Jerusalem or spread throughout the country. Hezbollah represents a threat 10 times greater than Hamas. Their rocket, missile, mortar arsenal is probably close to 200,000. And many of these missiles and rockets are precision guided. In other words, it's not just like shooting cavalierly to the south from Lebanon, but they can target specific targets, whether they're the military targets, civilian targets. So it's a very, very dangerous threat to Israel. And it has been escalating in the last couple of weeks. About a week ago, Hezbollah fired rockets that hit into fields, and with the dry temperatures up there and with the kind of rockets that were sent, the fires, I think there was about 100,000 dunam. That's, I don't know what the conversion rate to acres is, but I can't say it's twice as much brush and forest that was burned since the last war with Hezbollah, which was in 2006. There's an anticipation, John, that it's somehow this war is going to escalate to a major conflict. They just feel like it's a matter of time before that happens, not a question of if, but when. And it seems like the United States is trying to restrain Israel from doing this. But, you know, when you talk to Israelis on the northern border, and they say, we can't live with this monster on our, you know, next door, and don't know if another October 7th will happen. So there's a sense here that it's inevitable that there will be a war, and that the IDF will have to try to eliminate Hezbollah as this monster on its northern border, so it doesn't represent the kind of threat that it does.
Chris, we've been talking about a lot of serious things going on there in Israel. I want to give you 2 or 3 minutes here to just encourage people who are listening, because this is a lot of heavy stuff. Encourage people to pray. Whatever you can do to encourage our listeners as we're talking about all this heavy stuff and how they should view everything going on right now there in that part of the world.
I think that one of the best things, John, would be to realize I think we are living in a time when Jesus said on the Mount of Olives, there'd be wars and rumors of wars and nation rising up against nation. It's a very perilous time. I think people should know that what's happening here in Israel may spread to different parts of the world. However, God is a refuge and strength in times like this. And I think this is a time when we can look to Him. He also said, Jesus said, that when you see these things happen, look up, for your redemption draweth nigh. And I think in the midst of all these difficult times, we need to realize that that our refuge, our strength is in Him. It's important to draw close to Him, closer to Him, to draw closer to our families, our friends, our churches. That I think is probably, it's a simple prescription, but it's just what I believe we can and need to do during these perilous times. That so our hearts are not filled with fear, but filled with faith And remember that the best is yet to come, because he's coming.
Oh, those are some great words from Chris Mitchell, the Middle East Bureau Chief of the Christian Broadcasting Network. And again, I just want to encourage you to please connect with the team of Chris Mitchell. They do an awesome job. They have a full-time news bureau right there in Israel, in the capital city of Israel, in Jerusalem, and they do an awesome job of keeping everybody informed on what's happening there. They've got videos that they do. They've got the Jerusalem Dateline show that they do a couple of times a week, and so much more. So I want to highly recommend that you connect with them. And a great place to start is JerusalemDateline.org, JerusalemDateline.org. And Chris, I want to thank you again for your team, for what you guys do there. And you know what? I want to just ask everybody across the country to pray for you and your team, because you guys are right there at the forefront of what's happening there in this battle there in Israel. And it's a spiritual battle. We all know that. It's definitely a spiritual battle. So I just want to encourage people to pray for you, your staff, the families there. You guys are under a lot of attack, too, for what you do.
Well, it's a very challenging place to be. There's a lot of pressure. But to your point, John, people praying for us is the most valuable thing they can do. We have people praying on almost a daily basis, and you can see how God answers prayer. It makes such a difference. It makes the difference. And we can't do what we do without the help of the saints praying, the Holy Spirit. We get together every morning and pray at 9:30. So prayer makes the difference in what we do.
Well, I just want to thank everybody across the country for praying for the staff there at CBN in Jerusalem. They do appreciate that. And again, I just want to encourage you to please connect with CBN Israel. It's easy to do. Go to JerusalemDateline.org, JerusalemDateline.org, and they put out two shows every single week that deal with things that are going on there in Israel. These beautiful videos that they put together, very professionally done, all from a biblical perspective, JerusalemDateline.org. I want to remind you that you can download a podcast, this show, wherever you get your podcast. We're on all the major podcast platforms out there. Or you can go to afr.net, download the podcast there. Thanks for listening. I'm John Riley.